Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. And I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it's been nice to have a bit of a break from games because, well, we grind them out, man. You do the game grades and I do the scoring chances and then you do the scoring chances. And I have found having a little week off here has been okay for me. I'm happy to get back at it, but you know, the season, it's a grind for us poor bloggers, Bruce.
Well, it's a grind, probably a grind for everyone. And I mean, we certainly reached the cutting off point with the firing of the former general manager at the end of the first 60% of the season, which is now over. And so we really have a different final 40% to look forward to.
Yeah, so there's a couple plot lines in place. The main one is who's going to be the next GM, and it's obviously an absolutely massive decision. But Bruce, I postulated in a blog post this week a different question, which I actually think is the right question, because I think so often the Oilers get it wrong. And, you know, sometimes the right question is, what is the proper structure for Oilers management? And I think they finally got that right. But the question I have now is the right person making the decision. Is Bob Nicholson actually the right person? And it's not, I don't see that being asked a whole heck of a lot, except from fans, but the mainstream media, for instance, you know, all the people who usually cover the team and see, they're all like, who's going to be the GM? Who's like, you know, LeBrun, Friedman, it's the focus of Stauffer's show. It's what everyone's talking about. But I really think, honestly, if I'm completely honest, I think they need to ask a much more fundamental and serious question right now. And that's whether or not Bob Nicholson is the right guy to be in charge. And I'm asking this, Bruce, because he was brought in 2014 to do the audit of the Oilers organization and figure out what's, you know, as he said to in his last press conference, what's in the water. There's something in the water here. And he's dead right about that. There is something in the water. But he missed it, obviously, in 2014, because Bruce, he made the exact same mistake in naming a general manager that had always been made in Edmonton, probably forever. He didn't conduct a thorough search of the general managers that were out there, just like Kevin Lowe hiring Steve Tambellini, just like Kevin Lowe hiring Craig McTavish. He didn't go out there and talk to a number of qualified GM candidates and then pick the best one. He went right away to Shirelli and he went right away to McClellan. And I think the only thing I'll say in his favor is that he now acknowledges that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. But in his forensic audit, he missed the fundamental problem, which is a lack of due diligence in making big decisions and a rashness in making them. We saw this not just in GM hiring, but McTavish. His first mistake, just like Nicholson's first big decision, he got it wrong. McTavish's first big decision, he got wrong. He based on one interview with Dallas Eakins looking for to hire an associate coach for Ralph Krueger, he decided to fire Krueger. He wasn't even looking for a head coach, and he made this rash decision. So this is what's in the water, Bruce, is a lack of a decent plan for hiring proper people. And in that process, not getting incredibly valuable feedback on your organization that would come from having a proper process, which he might have got in 2015, which he might have heard from. Hey, he might have heard three or four people applying for that job saying, you want to beat Anaheim, St. Louis? Don't try to be them. Try to be the Blackhawks. Try to go in a different direction. So that's just an example of the kind of information Nicholson might have got that might have, even if he hired Shirelli in the end, might have informed his, if Shirelli's saying heavy, 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 he might have thought, geez, I've heard some other thoughts about this. And he might have heard, okay, maybe Nicholson at that time would have known that people in that organization were so super keen for Griffin Reinhart. He might have asked a few GMs, by the way, you know, people here keep talking about Griffin Reinhart. What do you think of him? And maybe he would have heard some other opinions about that. These are just a couple of examples, but it's endless. Mm-hmm. He would have heard about his Jerry Fleming. Maybe they would have said, you got to change your coach in Bakersfield. You just can't go with the status quo there. You know, you should have a job search instead of just handing it to the guy next in charge, which is what, that's the Oilers' way. That's what's in the water, is not doing proper diligence and hiring the people in hockey ops. And Nicholson is, he is guilty as can be. And so do we trust him?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm on board with the suggestion that in 2015, the process was undertaken far too fast. I mean, I'm not 100% sure about the first date, but I think it was April 15th that Chiarelli got fired from Boston Bruins. Then the 18th, the Oilers won the McDavid lottery. The 20th that they announced Nicholson as the new POHO in charge of hockey operations. And the 24th that he introduced Peter Chiarelli as the new GM. Chiarelli was supposedly came to town on the 23rd and had lunch with Nicholson, and by the next day he was the GM. That doesn't really suggest that there was an exhaustive planet-wide search for the best candidate for GM, but it's like, hey, look what just came available. He might not be around for long. Let's grab him, the way people now are trying to grab Joel Quenneville or you know, what have you, the latest guy on the block. And I agree, it was a, you know, it was a mistake to move that fast. I mean, it was, I mean, Chiarelli's firing in Boston had not come without cause. And unfortunately, some of the things that we've seen, that we saw cited at that time by Boston insiders have proven out to be similar issues in Edmonton.
Yeah, and Bruce, I want to make it clear, like I was fully on board with the how Chiarelli was hired at the time and the hiring of Chiarelli. And I was on board with Chiarelli. Like, certainly we did, the Edmonton Journal did a poll of hockey fans after the 2017 Stanley Cup run. Mm-hmm. And 84% of them said, you know, keep this guy as your GM. And then 14% of them said, give him a raise. So, you know, I kind of take that as an overall approval rating, so to speak. It's certainly an okay rating.
Rubber stamp,
right? Rubber stamp. So 98% of fans at that time. This was after the Lucic signing. This was after the Hall trade. This was after the Reinhardt trade. All this happened before, and 98% of fans. And I was one of them. And Bruce, I was not saying fire Chiarelli until the Los Angeles game a month ago. I wanted to see actually how this team he had put together would do under a new coach. And it was when I saw that I made up my mind, okay, fire him. It's not working out. It's clearly he's a big part of the problem. But I was not convinced until that moment. So I'm not here to say I'm just a fan, and I've never been a manager. I'm not a manager at work. I don't hire and fire people. But you'd think the business people, the experienced business people you're having to run this multi-million dollar organization, which is worth, apparently it's worth like $540 million US right now, that when you're hiring the most important hockey ops position, that you'd actually have a damn job search for all the good reasons that you have them. And it's not just to get the best person. It's to find out all Bob Nicholson, he never run an NHL organization. He'd been a hockey bureaucrat with Hockey Canada. And what did he know about the NHL? So did they make the right hiring in the first place with Nicholson? Well, that's up for grabs as well. But certainly he didn't cover himself with glory with the process in that first hiring. And again, to give him credit though, Bruce, and I do give him credit for this. He is making it damn clear he's going to do the process right this time. And that's a really big relief to hear. And maybe based on he's a smart man. He's obviously, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about him except that process. Maybe based on bitter experience, he'll get it right this time.
Well, based just the same way that a GM gets one free coach firing before his own head is on the block, I would suggest the POHO gets one free GM firing. I mean, last time they brought in the POHO and the GM at the same time, and the coach as referenced. But the clock started then in April of 2015, May of 2015, when McClellan came on board. And now the first experiment has largely, I mean, obviously there was that good year in 2017 when everybody was happy. Just win, baby. I mean, that's the bottom line of all this. And they haven't been doing enough of that lately. And the issue with Nicholson, I mean, the question is not what he knows, but who he knows. And who he knows is a whole hell of a lot of people with deep, deep connections in the hockey world. And there's no denying that. His Hockey Canada exposure was phenomenal for that. So it's not like he knew Chiarelli himself through that. Shirelli had served with Hockey Canada in the past, right? And he was maybe just a little quick to jump to the gun, saying, "I got one of the quality people that I really want. I'm going to grab them while I have the chance." And they didn't go enough through with it, but now they cannot make that mistake again. And the fact they fired Shirelli in midseason gives them a several month window to conduct the search and still wait for probably the best names available won't be coming on the market until after the season.
Bruce, do you trust Nicholson to get this right? Or would you do something different than, like, if it's your choice, you're the owner of the Edmonton Oilers. Are you going to say, okay, Bob, you can do it. And so I have an answer, but I want to hear your answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're listening on the, if you're just on the podcast, Bruce just made a really big face there of
decision. Oh, right, right. Yeah, it's, I mean, he does know lots of people and he does have experience with success. But as you say, that's at the upper echelons where you get your pick of the litter. And now you're at the point where you're building an NHL team without those built-in advantages. And honestly, all I can say is, we're going to find out.
Now, that's not an answer, Bruce. Would you have him make the decision, or would you bring in someone else to make the decision?
You mean a new Poho to replace the Poho to hire the GM?
Okay. Yeah, bring in a Poho first.
Yeah.
Or would you go with Nicholson making the decision?
I'd be sorely tempted to clear the decks, man. Just clear the decks. Bring in a whole new top.
I would clear the decks too. I would do that too. I would say, Bob, thank you very much. And maybe if he's got a role in the business operations like Lowe does, apparently, I would bring in a new guy. I mean, I would just bring in a new guy who knows how to do this and start there. And you know what? Craig McTavish is still VP of hockey operations, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
He's Keith Gretzky's boss. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I just think, okay, here's the problem. You know, when he made his initial hire, Kevin Lowe and Shirelli and other guys had worked with him on the 24 Olympic team, worked with Nicholson, and he hired one of those guys. You know, who's going to come in there? You need someone who's conducting that interview, who can hear the truth about the organization. And, you know, there's people within that organization, including probably McTavish, you don't like, they have a vested interest.
I was just going to use that term.
And not hearing the truth or not accepting it. Like, you know, who's ever been running Bakersfield the last few years until you finally brought in Jay Woodcroft? You got it completely wrong. You know, that's the message. Whoever's running pro scouting, who hired those people? You got it completely wrong. So that might be Nicholson himself who's signing off on all of that. And he is, like, he's the boss over all of it all. So I just, are they prepared to hear the truth? And is Daryl Cates prepared to risk that Bob Nicholson's ready to hear the truth about the entire organization and do whatever it takes? I don't know. Like, it's kind of, you'd kind of wonder about that, considering he is responsible for it and he's been there long enough to be responsible for it. So, okay. Do I think that is going to happen? No, that's not going to happen. It's clear. Okay. I don't know either. Yeah. Okay. So
about a hypothetical world, which this isn't.
So let's talk about the real world and what could happen with Nicholson in charge. So here's what I think should happen. Again, no management ever managed anybody. The cult of hockey is a cooperative between all of us working on it. We all mismanage it together. So I'm just a fan. But here's my opinion of what they should do. Based on bitter experience of watching Oilers previous hires go bad, is if Nicholson's going to do it, bring in some outsiders, experienced hockey NHL people on a short-term contract to be your headhunters, to conduct the hiring search and to give you advice during that process. So it might be, maybe you could hire, if Steve Yzerman won't take the job, would he work with you for 3 months to get the right person? Could you hire Steve Yzerman and two other people? Could even be quiet. Hire those people to be your headhunters and who know that what the hell they're doing, unlike Bob Nicholson, who's just learning on the job, apparently. Like, that's what the facts tell us, learning on the job, bring in people who have done this work, and set up a committee for your headhunting committee, and have them make a recommendation to Bob Nicholson. How does that sound?
Well, sounds a little pie in the sky. I mean, it seems more likely that the experts with experience in the industry are already in-house, and that's potentially part of the problem, as we've already touched on. So to go outside for that, I'd be more than a little surprised. But
I would be too, but I don't think it's beyond, I don't think it's, yeah, you might be right, Bruce. That might be pie in the sky. But on the other hand, and it might be unusual, I don't know if a team's done this. He might even do it informally, though. But you know, and again, to give Nicholson credit, he is learning on the job. Mm-hmm. He's talking, you know, he's admitting to past mistakes and talking about how he's going to change things. So the only thing in this whole process that gives me confidence is that, the fact that he's doing that, which I find, like, I find it really encouraging, and I really give him credit for that. So part of that could be for him, at least, to go to all these people in hockey. You say he's so well-connected. He is. Go to all these people and get their advice on how to do this right and what they should be looking for and what they need to address. And he has all those connections. He should be, I suspect he's using them. So that's the one thing that I find encouraging in this whole process. I would like to see it more formal than that, but maybe he's doing it informally. It sounds like he is.
Yeah, well, you bring up the case of Jerry Fleming. I mean, if you think back to 2015 when the big changes took place, before that, Todd Nelson had been called up from, at that time, Oklahoma City in mid-season to replace the fired Dallas Aikens. And Jerry Fleming just stepped up from assistant coach to head coach, interim head coach, to finish out that season. And I don't know if any kind of job search was conducted down there to say, well, is the interim head coach the guy we really want for the next 3 years overseeing our minor league operation, or do we want to revisit that? That just seemed to be laissez-faire. They just left him in there. It was only this summer that they finally got around to reorganizing the coaching ranks. And I think the decision to send Jay Woodcroft down to the minors, what I call the reverse Nelson, was an inspired one. And I think he's doing a fine job down there, near as I can tell, and replacing Jerry Fleming, they've improved their coaching. Maybe kept the best coach of the group that got let go from the Oilers and reorganized. So maybe he is learning on the job. I mean, or maybe that was Shirelli's move. I mean, presumably there was a meeting at some point. It's hard to know who's responsible for final decisions of that sort, but I think they finally got that one right.
You know, they got a number of things right. Nicholson's the Shirelli era was marked by some good decisions and some bad ones. So, and you know, I think they got Keith Gretzky right in bringing him in to run amateur scouting. I think that they got the Woodcroft thing right. You know, and I don't know, like, did they do a wide job search for all these things, or did they just bring in their friend Woodcroft and their friend Gretzky? It looks like they did the old school way of hiring people and did it that way. So, but it just strikes me like in this fundamental job in the organization, this job's big enough that you just need, and certainly with the Oilers situation, the way it's been, you're desperate for this outside input. And again, Nicholson sounds like he's open to that and is willing to learn. And I guess I'll leave it there. I don't know if you have any final thoughts on the matter.
I guess only as trivial as wait and see. I mean, we're along for the ride, right? So, I mean, to some point, I'm a fatalist about some of this. And I mean, when Shirelli first came on board, my big concern then was, not did they undergo the due process of a wide job search, as did they bring in somebody who's actually experienced in the job, as opposed to what they've done in the past, which was a rookie Glenn Sather and a rookie Kevin Lowe and a rookie Steve Tambellini and a rookie Craig McTavish, GMs. And he was the first experienced GM to come in here. And I looked at his record and I thought, well, it'd be interesting to follow on. Let's try and think along with him. And I mean, a lot of people like to be armchair GM and say, well, he should have done this instead of that. And I'm like, well, what is it he's trying to do? What's he trying to build here? And only last year, I wrote a very critical post about Shirelli's net result. And then
last spring,
couple more this year. And I think in the end he deserved to be fired, but it was kind of an interesting game to play. I think it's just why is he doing what he's doing? And in the end, the answer was, I don't know why.
It's a very good point that you make, Bruce, and it's why he had such widespread support initial, right? Because again, he was the he was an outsider. He wasn't part of the old boys club. Seemingly, I mean, he was in a different way. He was because he was Lowe's friend from the Olympics. They are colleague. They had built, helped build the 2014 Olympic team with Nicholson. So that's an extension of that club. But nonetheless, wide experience as a player agent in Ottawa and in Boston. And fairly, you know, those Ottawa and Boston franchises both been successful. So there was, you know, and he had a vision of the team of how to, and he went about doing it. He just turned out to be wrong. And such is life.
It was the mid-course corrections that started to get him, you know, and really the trades that he made this year, during the year. And part of this I put on the organization, you know, because the other day I looked up in their team directory and they got two pro scouts listed, two. Pro scouts. Oh, heck. Dwayne Sutter?
Yeah.
Wonder. And who's the other guy? Anyway, you wonder, like, you think you got this $80 million. Surely you can afford $50,000 or whatever, $100,000, whatever it costs to pay in a couple extra scouts. Two scouts. I mean, surely either something's missing or other people, too many people are doing double duty. But the trades they made to bring in pros this year, the guys that they brought in this year, from Chris Weidman to Ryan Spooner to Brandon Manning to Alexander Petrovich to Valentin Zikov, and all we have, and Colby Cave. I mean, that's the six guys, pros, that they brought in during the season. Now, you tell me how much those guys have moved the needle. And instead, what they did was they bloated further the already bloated salary cap so that the new guy is facing some serious headaches. Like, they got no room to add now. And it is a mess that
clearly they got to get new pro scouts. Like, that's job, you know, that's job two.
We've been complaining about that for 10 years, David.
Oh, I know we have, Bruce. It's just so frustrating. You know, initially, Shirelli had some success there. He brought in Maroon and Cassian and Talbot, and a lot of those moves worked out pretty well. So, looked like
in the short term,
might have turned around a bit. Yeah, in the short term. Okay, so there are a couple of small moves that we'll just discuss quickly.
Sure.
Well, I mean, we could bat around what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, job one, obviously, is to clear cap space. But, and I guess you can do that by, you know, the latest suggestion I hear on the internet on talk radio is this idea of trading away players and eating half their salary or part of their salary and sending a few picks, like moving Lucic with a couple picks and eating some of his salary. And yeah, you know, Lucic, I think, is, you have to ask yourself, you know, he probably, if he's used as a fourth line enforcer, maybe even has one more year. And every year that you have him is one less year of having to eat his contract. Mm-hmm. You got to pay the full hit. So it's a balancing act, because I'm not convinced that he wasn't just used on the fourth line as an enforcer who could play a little bit, you know, Ryan Reeves. Yeah. That's who he essentially is right now. That you might want, because I could just see if they trade Cassian and Lucic and McDavid gets belted, all of a sudden the cry goes up. We need to, you know, get an enforcer. You know, we didn't need to cover this off. So maybe the plan is to just keep Lucic for one more year and see how it goes. What do you think?
I'm thinking back to that time that Cassian, as a Vancouver Canucks, smashed Sam Gagne in the mouth with his stick. And the next day, the Oilers went out and signed Steve McIntyre. Right? I mean, what did that prove?
I would keep Cassian or Lucic next year, one of the two.
The point being that Lucic is never going to be worth $6 million ever again. But the question is, how do you limit the damage? Like, is he more valuable than a replacement-level player? Because if you buy the guy out, you're paying most of his salary, and you have to pay the guy who replaces him, right? Like, on a different...
I don't think you can... The buyout doesn't work. It's got to be, like, one of these... Keep trading him, eating half, trading him, like, these different teams eating a little piece of the contracts as he gets moved around the league, finally ends up on the right team who pays about half his salary or half his salary. And that's how this works. And I'm... I mean, that certainly should be explored, but I do think they need either Cassian or Lucic on the team next year. And I don't mind Zach Cassian at all as a player. And Lucic is a fourth line player. I don't think I'd mind either. I just don't, there's this temptation of the coaches to keep playing him too high in the lineup. We see it even with Hitchcock.
The bigger issue to me is eight defensemen on the under contract for basically $2 million and up, and seven of them coming back next year, with only Alex Petrovich being a expiring contract at the end of this year. So they got to clear out that logjam somehow. And how do you do that? And this recent move, I haven't brought in Brandon Manning. Man, I just can't get past that move in terms of how it made no sense at all on any level.
Well, and I think on one level it made sense, but I made no sense in terms of who they brought back. I think in who they moved out, moving Kajula, well, I was good with, Bruce. So on that level, I'm okay with it. Moving Kajula, I'm okay. But bringing in Brandon Manning, oh, come on. I mean, that was just madness. I mean, now that we've seen him play, I mean, and it's like now they're talking about Sam Gagne. And I guess they to bring in Sam Gagne, who earns, what, $3 million next year or something, they'd have to move out Spooner. So that if that's the deal, maybe that makes sense for the Oilers. But, I mean, you have – why do you want that? You have Cooper Marody.
Yeah.
He is a right shot center. He's getting a point a game right now. He's 22, I think, now. You know, he's proven at the AHL level. He's in the All-Star game at the AHL level. Why wouldn't you go with Cooper Marody over Sam Gagne? Like, why? Unless it's just a salary, you know, you're just trading problems with Spooner.
And
but if it's anything other than that and you're taking any salary, like, go with Cooper Marody, man. Like he's younger. He might get better than some veteran, I mean, who's shown. Like, and then, I mean, Kurt wrote, like, the idea, Kurt Levins, our cult of hockey colleague, is maybe Gagne at 3C. I haven't seen Sam Gagne play in a long time, but I don't think I've ever seen in Oilers history. There's few players who are less equipped to play center and defense than Sam Gagne. So I don't see how he can survive as a 3C. Like, just unless something radically has changed in his game and he's devoted himself to blocking shots and winning faceoffs and doing all those gritty things that
not watching the puck.
Not watching the puck.
Well, like, I mean, not only watching the puck.
So, all due respect to Sam Gagne, I'd love to see Sam Gagne actually on the top power play. I think he could actually lend a lot. His shot could lend a lot on that left half wall. They need a guy, a right shooter who can, you know, they're determined not to use Jesse Puljujärvi there for some reason. So, you know, might as well try someone because it, but anyway.
Well, as Kurt suggested in his post, the whole idea was trading one problem contract for another. Yes. I mean, they don't have the cap space to take on Sam Gagne if they wanted to, and he was available for free on waivers earlier this year. The idea with Spooner was there's a similar contract also buried in the AHL. Maybe he might be a better fit for the Canucks, and maybe Gagne might be a better fit for us, or maybe each of them just needs a fresh start and see what happens next, because they're both on the hook for almost identical $3.1 million this year and next, and Spooner actually $4 million. The Rangers actually retained a little bit of it, so but it would make that deal would make no sense either otherwise, because both contracts have negative value at this point.
Yeah. Hey, Bruce, I think I hear your feet scraping there, man.
Okay, sorry.
No problem. What was I going to say? Yeah. Anyway, what about now Joel Pettersson they signed, which is, you know, the one thing I don't understand with him is why they didn't bring him. Maybe he didn't want to come over this year, but that was an option for bringing this, you know, he's the second leading scoring defenseman in the Swedish Elite League. He's a veteran player. When Klefbom goes down, again, this is like, why are you looking at bringing in Sam Gagne when you have Cooper Marody, who's excelling at the AHL level, and you have a player who's killing it in the Swedish League, and can run a power play. He's a right shot guy. He can run a power play. He runs a power play, and Klefbom goes down. Why? I don't get why they didn't bring him over this year, unless he really didn't want to come this year, and that wasn't.
Hard to know. I mean, without seeing what the loan agreement between the Oilers and Lakers.
Show,
yeah, however you pronounce that.
I'm sure I got it wrong too, yeah.
Yeah. without seeing the loan agreement, there's really no way to knowing. But you would think that when you lose your power play quarterback, Swedish defenseman, and if you've got another power play quarterback, Swedish defenseman already under contract, then wouldn't that be a different option than Brandon Manning and Alexander Petrovich? The guy can actually move the puck. I mean, that's what they've been missing, is puck movers. Now, I'm not sure. He's probably not ready. And I understand the reason they loaned him back. They wanted to see if he could repeat at the Swedish League level. And he's done that. And he's done that on a much weaker team without the wonderful Elias Pettersson, who was the recipient of some of Pearson's passes last year and turned them into points. This year, no Pettersson. Vaio has dropped down the standings, but Pearson is still putting up the points. He's second in the league again in scoring, so it looks like he's legit. I like the signing. I like the signing originally. I thought it was an inventive move by Shirelli with very little risk to actually obtain a player that had no acquisition cost. They just signed him, and I see him potentially helping the team. In all fairness, I doubt that he would have probably been enough to turn the thing around in Klefbom's injury situation, but it's interesting that they didn't even try it.
Yes, I mean, considering the alternatives have turned out to be Petrovic and Manning, and it took him a while to make a move as well. I mean, we did get to see Caleb Jones, who I thought was really strong in the cameo performance. Started to make some major errors on goals against and got sent down. Yep. But the Petrovic trade, I know everyone's okay with that, but I mean, he's a free agent after this year. There's no money to sign him. And he can't play either very much. You know, he's not as bad as Manning, but sorry to pile on Brandon Manning here, poor guy, but he is playing at Colton Tubert like levels of hockey. And anyway, they had Kevin Gravel. Shirelli's famous last words from Peter Shirelli is, yeah, we think that he's going to be an upgrade on Kevin Gravel, and it's not close. So,
and Gravel is signed at basically league minimum, and it's expiring at the end of the season. And now they got no place to put him. If they even wanted to re-sign him, they won't, because they already got seven guys coming back at $2 million plus, right? I mean,
here's one for you, Bruce. Let's leave it on this. A tough question. Would you?
Okay.
And it's probably premature, because we're going to have a lot more in terms of the Oilers being a buyer or a seller. We'll know within five games, I think, what they're going to be. Obviously, it's going to be really, well, maybe it won't be. Maybe they'll still be 3 points out 5 games from now. I guess that's a distinct possibility. But Chiasson, would you move him at the deadline? Let's say they're 4 points out or 5 points out at the deadline. Would you move Chiasson then? And my vote is definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is, you know what? The shooting percentage stuff, and to give the so-called analytics guys credit, this is one of the things that they raised in a big way, which is proven out to be true time and again. Someone with a really high shooting percentage, there's major question marks around that. And, I mean, I think you can cash in on Chiasson, and maybe could you even get a second round pick for him at the trade deadline? I would do that in a second. And if he wants to sign here in the summer, sign. He can still sign here. Yeah. But I would be very interested to see what he does on another team. And not everyone has shown they can play with McDavid, but I think that he's gotten a huge bump from that. And so I would definitely move him.
He's actually had more tougher time playing with McDavid than he did playing a bit further down the lineup in my view.
Yeah, he's not a good fit with McDavid, actually, I don't think, which I've said. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd be a little reluctant to trade him because he's, you know, the team doesn't have enough NHL wingers, and I think he's shown this year that he's an NHL winger. He is making the league minimum. He's got, you know, a few points in his favor. He's got size. He screens the front of the net well. He's useful on the power play. He's a right-handed stick on an all left-handed power play.
I like him as a player too, Bruce. I just think you can sign him this summer.
Yeah, well, you'd be giving up on the playoffs a little bit, I think. I mean, that's the kind of player. He's a rental. You just keep him and rent him yourself,
If you're
or
5 points,
you
this is being 5 points out at that point. So.
yeah. Well, this goes back to really what we spoke of earlier. It's, 3 weeks from now is the time to really
Yeah, let's talk
say
about it then.
where are we at in terms of trade deadline. If we're 5 points out, it's one equation. If you're 2 points out, it's another. And if you've got healthy lineup, it's a third. It's there's just too many variables to really do much more than generally anticipate the trade deadline. As opposed to,
Yeah,
are
because
we a
I.
buyer or a seller? I can't tell you that today, so all the other
Yeah.
questions are spill off of
And
that.
we'll know tomorrow, I guess, if Oscar Klefbom's coming back, or the next day, we'll know soon if Oscar Klefbom's back. If he's back, they're going to win 10 in a row, right? So.
100%.
Yes. Then Shirley can say,
Oh,
"You fired
yeah.
me too early. You didn't give me a chance." All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
All right. And just a shout out to Edmonton Oilers head coach Ken Hitchcock for being named to the Order of Hockey in Canada. Among just 27 people so honored, and it's a very wide net they cast, men and women, and all the way from players to coaches to executives to builders to you name it. So he's in the upper echelon of an award that's only been awarded now for 7 years. So
He's a key
congrats to
member
him.
of the Edmonton School, right? Like as a
Absolutely.
representative of the Edmonton School of Hockey, which is a real school built around Claire Drake
Yep.
and all his disciples.
Claire Drake is in there. Another guy nominated today was George Kingston, another Claire Drake disciple.
Way to go, Hitch. Thanks, Bruce.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.